Welcome. My name is Susan Daffron, and I'm the president of Logical Expressions, Inc., which is a book and software publishing company based in Idaho. I'm also the president of the Small Publishers, Artists, and Writers Network, otherwise known as SPAWN. So thanks for listening. Today we're talking to Elizabeth Danziger, who brings 30 years of experience to her work. She's written four books, The Handbook, Hand in Hand, Winning by Letting Go, and Get to the Point, Painless Advice for Writing Memos, Letters, and Emails Your Colleagues and Clients Will Understand. And that's actually the topic of today's call is writing. And in addition to her books, Liz has contributed to many national magazines, including New Woman, Glamour, Self, Family Circle, and Reader's Digest. She's also appeared in a number of business publications like Personnel Journal, Journal of Accountancy, and Training and Development. She's edited everything from dissertations and memoirs to book proposals and also co-written a number of books. She helps her clients discover what they really mean to say and develop the best ways to get their meaning across. She's also trained business people all over the United States in basic writing and email skills. So, after all that, welcome and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. So we're going to talk today about getting to the point. I want to start just by giving a little anecdote of the first book that I wrote and how I almost didn't write it. My first book was published in 1980 when I was 26 years old. Now, I knew that I was going to write a book. I had known that ever since my junior year in college, and I was at Pomona College in Claremont. I was walking across the quad, and suddenly a little voice in my head said, "Hey, one day you're going to get out of here, and you're going to have to earn money." I was a philosophy major. So my little voice said, "What are you going to do?" And another little voice in my head said, "Write a book." And the first little, I'm not a schizophrenic, I swear.
Okay, well, you are a much more practical philosophy major than a lot of philosophy majors
I've met. Me before I graduated, and I said to the little voice, "What will I write a book about?" And the other little voice said, "Palmistry," because it so happened that I was an amateur palmist, and palmistry, not that I was the world's greatest expert on palmistry, but palmistry was the only thing that I actually knew anything about more than my professors at school, and so palmistry was something that I actually knew about. So I went, okay, that's good, and I considered it handled. I will write a book about palmistry. There's a whole story about how I wrote the outline, how I found an agent, how I found a publisher. But before that, I actually had writer's block for 2 years. I knew that I was going to write it. I had no doubt about that. But every time I sat down to write, I would get all my papers, I would get my outline, I would get everything together, I would pick up the pen, and I would start to put a few words to paper. And I guess I have, hopefully other people have little voices in their heads. Everyone I've trained has had a voice in their head. I had yet another little voice in my head, and another little voice in my head, as soon as I would start to write anything, would say, "That's stupid. That's verbose. That's dumb. That's not good." And literally, I would feel the words sort of flowing down my arm to get into the pen, to get onto the paper, and that little voice would go, "No, stupid, 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 bad, verbose, blah, blah, blah." And all the strength would go out of my arm, and I would go, oh, I hadn't realized that. I guess I better put this off till later. And I would put away all my papers and go on and do the other things I was doing in my life. So this went on, actually, I am sorry to say, for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Until finally I sat down to work on the book, got my papers, did the whole thing, started to write. The little voice said, "Nah, nah, nah, that's stupid." And I finally said back, I finally talked back to that little boy, and I said, "Okay, maybe it will be stupid, maybe it will be verbose, but could we just get something onto the paper? And if it's stupid, I promise I'll throw it away before I send it to anyone." And from that point on, I had a completely different relationship with that inner voice. But every time it said, "Nee, nee, 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 nee," I would go, "Right, thank you for sharing. Thank you, I hear you. Could we just get on with it?" And I have an agreement with myself, which I assume all writers have with themselves, which is, if it's really, really bad, we won't show it to anyone. We can delete it, we can shred it, we can trash it, we can burn it, we can do all kinds of things with it if we're not happy with it. So having gone through that experience of that extended writer's block and then finally getting through it, and the book actually sold 60,000 copies. It was published in Dutch and Korean and Chinese, and it came out in the Japanese Cosmo and was excerpted in Family Circle. The book really did well, and I wrote a sequel to it 2 years later, and then wrote Winning by Letting Go, which was published by Harcourt Brace Jovanovic a few years after that. So that was really the only time in my life that I had that extended writer's block. And from that point forward, that was really how I dealt with it. Is when that little voice came up, it was like, okay, although I will actually share another anecdote from the third book, which is that I used to sit down, I was writing Winning by Letting Go, which is a popular psychology book, and I would get all my, at that point, finally I had progressed, I had a computer.
Yes.
And I would sit down at my computer, get ready to work, and the little voice would say, Pepperidge Farm cookies. Pepperidge Farm cookies.
Oh, no.
Can't do anything without Pepperidge Farm cookies. And for a while, I have to confess, I would go, oh, of course, I need cookies. And I would, he's come back, blah, blah, blah. And finally, I realized I wasn't going to meet my deadline. And I said to the little voice, okay, you can have the cookies after you finish the piece of work that's set before you for this morning. First, we'll do the work, then you can get the cookies. So I do have an inner adult. So, you know, I sympathize with any writer who has trouble meeting their deadline, and I want to talk to you a little bit about how overcoming fear of writing and procrastination can help you get started and get going in your writing process. As the introduction to that, I want to share with you a brief excerpt from John Steinbeck's diary. John Steinbeck kept a journal as he was writing what is widely reputed to be the great American novel, The Grapes of Wrath. And while he was writing The Grapes of Wrath, he kept a journal. And his journal was actually published in the 80s as a separate book, and it was contained the notes. It was written, I think, edited by the poet William Kennedy. So let me just read you a little bit of what the great American novelist was thinking as he wrote the great American novel. Okay? Quote, "No one else knows my lack of ability the way I do. Sometimes I seem to do a good little piece of work, but when it is done, it slides into mediocrity. Got her done, and I'm afraid she's a little dull. My many weaknesses are beginning to show their heads. My work is no good, I think. I'm desperately upset about it. I'm slipping. I've been slipping all my life. Young man wants to talk, wants to be a writer. What could I tell him? Not a writer myself yet. I am sure of one thing. It isn't the great book I had hoped it would be. It's just a run-of-the-mill book. And the awful thing is that it is absolutely the best I can do." So William Kennedy writes on that quote, he wrote the book in 5 months, writing in longhand and producing 2,000 words a day, the equivalent of 7 double-spaced type pages, an enormous output for any writer and ultimately a daily tour de force. But he was flagellating himself for this also, quote from Steinbeck, "Vacillating and miserable. I'm so lazy. So damned lazy. Where has my discipline gone? Have I lost control? My laziness is overwhelming." Close quote. This novel would be his 9th work of fiction in 10 years, and he would be 37 years old at its publication. So we can hear from this that it doesn't matter how great a writer you are, you can still have those paralyzing thoughts of self-doubt and self-questioning. And the difference is, the main difference between people who write successfully and people who don't write or who write unsuccessfully is not whether they have anxiety and resistance to writing. Steinbeck felt it, and he wrote The Grapes of Wrath. The rest of us feel it, and we go buy Pepperidge Farm cookies. So the difference is that the great writers, although they had doubts, they had fears, they worried that they weren't talented enough or they weren't good enough or whatever, but yet they sat down every single day and wrote. And that, in the end, and I have watched this now for going on 30 years, that is the difference. Writers write and talkers talk. And people who want to write just need to sit down every day and write. And there's actually, I hate to say it, but maybe we should end the seminar right here. I mean, there's actually, there's no way around that. But there are things that you can do that will help you. And when I do corporate business trainings in writing, I like to ask people to do a little exercise, which I'm going to ask you, even though, I'm going to give you another piece of information here. Sorry, this is parenthetical. If you're on the call, you're not able to send me questions, you're not able to ask me questions because you're muted, but I'm going to give you my email address. And if you have a question that you'd like me to address at the end of the seminar, please email it to me, and I will do my best to address it. So let me just tell you my email address right now. And if you want to give your responses to my questions and exercises, if you want to email them to me, that would be okay too. Okay? So the email address is LizD, LIZD, as in Danziger, at worktalk.com. LIZ as in zebra, D as in David, LIZD at worktalk.com. So if you have a question or a comment, please feel free to send it to me. I have left my email inbox open so that I'll be able to see when messages come in. Okay, so going back to overcoming fear of writing, the first thing I'd like you to do, if you have paper or a computer in front of you, is to make a list of the physical sensations, the thoughts, and the emotions that you experience when you are about to write or when you're thinking about writing. So people in the corporate trainings that I do have listed things like when they think about writing or they're sitting down to write, people have experiences like stomach pain, shoulder pain, back pain. They have to run to the bathroom. They have an urge for a cigarette. They have an urge for a cup of coffee. They have a sudden urge to, like, rearrange the papers on their desk. We'll get to procrastination in a minute. That's where it comes when you sit down to write and suddenly nothing seems more important than checking your voicemail or checking your email or checking anything or doing anything other than writing. Jimmy Breslin once said, anything that isn't, that writing is harder than anything except heavy lifting or something like that. Writing is hard. So make a list of what happens to you, what physical sensations occur to you when you sit down to write. Then also make a list of the repetitive thoughts that go through your mind. And sometimes people, like I did, they have repetitive, obstructive thoughts like, I'm stupid, I'm stupid, I'm stupid, I can't do this, I'm a bad writer, I'm not good, not good enough. One person in a training I did a few years ago said the thought that repeatedly went through his mind was that he actually wanted to murder his manager who had told him to write this. I'm like, whoa, but you don't have to share that in the group. A lot of strange thoughts go through people's minds when they sit down to write. And it's important to know what thoughts are going through your mind and then feeling. So sometimes you may sit down to write and have an experience of panic or anxiety or sadness or feeling overwhelmed or whatever it is. So if you suffer from fear of writing or you find that it's difficult for you to get started, one of the things you can do is to sit down and make this list of thoughts, sensations, and feelings and just kind of sit back and look at it. And first of all, honor the fact that it's very difficult for anyone to do their best intellectual and creative work in the presence of these kinds of experiences. The panic, the thought, the stomach ache, the backache, the headache, the cramps, the this, the that, and all of that. So it's important to honor that and to recognize that these things are there. And interestingly enough, once you respect them and honor them and say, wow, I always get a stomach ache when I have to write. that's the stomach ache that I always get when I have to write. Now, some of you might do exercise. I hope everyone does exercise. But, for example, I can share from my own experience, I'm a swimmer. I swim a mile 3 or 4 times a week, and I've been doing this for years. And yet, almost every time I swim, after 4 or 5 laps, another little voice, I guess I'm really confessing to a lot of little voices here, but maybe it's all the same little voice. It says, that's a long distance. Do you really want to go that far today? And every time I say to it, no, we'll finish the warm-up set and then we'll discuss this. So the point is, if you know that you have certain thoughts or experiences that always come up at the prospect of writing, then as soon as you can acknowledge them, you become their master. And you can say, oh, that's the anxiety that I always get when I sit down to write. It doesn't mean anything. It's more like a crick in my neck or a little nothing. It's just a little thing that always happens. It's a little thing that always wants to get in my way. And then you don't have to let it get in your way. So if you're sitting and you're having trouble getting started, you can make a list. You can write down what's really happening for you. And then I do have a few suggestions that can help you further overcome the fear of writing. One is take a few deep, long breaths. That means fill your entire rib cage with air, hold it for a second or two, and blow it all out. Take a few deep breaths and blow them out completely. Because what happens is when we get fearful and stressed, we start, without realizing it, we start to breathe in a shallow way. We reduce the amount of blood in our brains as the blood rushes to our extremities so that we can run away from the saber-toothed tiger. And what we have to do is take a few deep, long breaths to override that fight or flight mechanism and to get the oxygen back into our brains where we need it so that we can actually do our writing. So put your feet flat on the floor. Take a few long, deep breaths and exhale completely. Next, break the task into manageable chunks. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. So if you sit down and you have a whole novel that you're planning to write or a whole nonfiction book that you're planning to write, that is an overwhelming thought. I know because I've done it. But saying, I'm going to write 5 pages, or I'm going to take this section of my outline and flesh it out today, that's something that you can do. So don't ever think in terms of, oh my gosh, I've got to write this whole book. That will make you crazy. Break it into manageable, small chunks. Next, promise yourself rewards. I know that I'm not the only person who has little voices telling her, eat cookies, da-da-da-da. I used to smoke cigarettes. I gave it up. Have a cigarette, have a coffee, have a cappuccino, whatever it might be. And the truth is that writing is hard, and it requires a lot of intellectual focus and a lot of physical discipline to sit in your seat and do it. So promise yourself a reward. When I finish this section of my work, I will call the person I love. When I finish this section of the work, if you're still eating sugar, you know, you can get those cookies. Get whatever it is. So promise yourself a reward. Try to allow yourself enough time. On all 4 of my book deadlines, I tried to do this with magazine articles too, and it worked really well. I always created a false deadline for myself so that the book was due August 31st. When I did my own planning, I planned to finish it August 15th. First of all, because unexpected things happen and you never know when you're going to end up needing that extra time. And also because by finishing before your actual deadline, you allow yourself to put it aside and then come back to it a week later and reread it, hopefully with a fresh eye. So allow yourself enough time, and we'll talk in just a moment about procrastination, which will help you to allow yourself enough time. But I really recommend that technique, false deadline, because it means that you're building in a cushion of time for yourself to allow for unexpected events and to allow yourself to let it sit and then look at it again. And lastly, use your unconscious mind to help you. I use this a lot in writing all of my books, and that is that if I knew that I needed to write a certain section of the book the next day, what I would do is write a letter, and if I'm getting into the woo-woo area, I guess there's nothing I can do about that. I would write a letter to my higher self, whether you want to call it higher self, God, whoever you, guardian angel, whatever you want to call it, unconscious mind, whatever you want to call it. But I would write a letter to that part of me that knows better than my rational mind knows. And I would say, dear blank, tomorrow morning when I wake up, my mind will be clear and I will know how to write the blah, blah, blah section of my book. Thank you. And I would sign my name. So, and then it really is amazing. If you're at a block, if you don't know how to deal with a question, if you don't know how to phrase a point, whatever it is, your unconscious mind is very, very smart. And your unconscious mind is processing lots and lots and lots of data in a very effective way. And you can harness the power of your unconscious mind by writing in a journal before you go to sleep and following up the next morning. And you'll be amazed. You'll have dreams. You'll see things. You'll understand things. Phrases will come to you. It's really quite remarkable. So use your unconscious mind. So those are a few tools that you can use to overcome the fear of writing. Let's talk briefly about procrastination. Someone once asked Ernest Hemingway, what's the hardest thing about writing? And Hemingway said, the hardest thing about writing is that first you have to clean the refrigerator. And that is true. Very often, if we are supposed to write, anything will be better than writing. So, and what you can do is think briefly about what are some of the ways that you procrastinate. We all have our own personal ways of procrastinating. Maybe Hemingway had a really clean refrigerator. Some of us check email. Some of us check voicemail. Some of us check whatever we do. Some of us talk on the phone, make a cell phone call, whatever it might be. Identify, just as I said, identify what are the thoughts and feelings and anxieties that always crop up every time you sit down to write. Once you identify them, you can overcome them. It's the same thing with the procrastination. If you know that every time you really should be writing, you have an overwhelming impulse to check your email, just tell yourself, no, I'm writing from 1 until 2:30 today, and I am not going to do anything, and I am not going to check my email. I will check my email when I'm done. But if you automatically just do the thing that you always procrastinate with, then it's unlikely that you're going to ever break the habit of procrastination. So how can you get around the tendency to procrastinate? One thing is to schedule time for writing and honor it just as if there were another person waiting in your kitchen or in your lobby or in your waiting room or wherever you may be. Schedule time for writing and honor that time so that no matter if someone feels like calling you on the phone, just because they feel like dialing 10 digits into the phone, in no way means that you're obligated to talk to them. That's why God invented voicemail. So if you have set aside time for writing, don't answer the phone. If it's really that urgent, they'll send a policeman to your house, you know? Also, imagine that you have scheduled a time to be with your reader, as if your reader, him or herself, were actually sitting in your office waiting for you. If a person were waiting for you, you would not sit around and water your plants and check your voicemail and check your email and do all these other things. So visualize your reader waiting for you and honor the time that you promised you would spend with your reader, which is writing for that person. Another way to overcome procrastination is to set interim goals. Don't say, oh my gosh, I've got to finish this whole book by August 31st. No, we're going to say, I'm going to finish chapter one by May 1st, and I'm going to finish this small part of chapter one by April 15th. So set interim goals and promise yourself interim rewards. This is related to overcoming the fear, but it's important. If you finish a chapter, go out to dinner. If you finish something important, buy yourself some whatever, some little thing that's not too expensive, but something that you really like, that really gives you pleasure. So give yourself interim rewards for meeting your interim goal. And you can also threaten disastrous consequences. I'm not so keen on threatening disastrous consequences, but sometimes it does help. Susan, are there other tools that you've used to overcome procrastination?
Well, I think for a lot of people, this sort of dovetails into what you were talking about before, that the worst part of writing is getting started, and people often will schedule time, and then the time keeps getting pushed back because they've had to clean the refrigerator or something. But really, once you're in the writing phase, it's like I think that really people getting past those bad feelings is a big part of it. Is if like. And I'm really happy that when I sit down to write, I don't have a stomach ache or a shoulder pain or something. I mean, that just sounds terrible. I probably never would have become a writer. If you do have those feelings of anxiety, then I think that does tie into the procrastination a lot because you're sort of anticipating that bad feeling. And that note, you know, it's just like training dogs. There's aversion training and there's positive reinforcement training, and you're kind of focusing on the positive reinforcement, which is great. But on the other hand, no one will ever say that aversion training doesn't work. That's why shock collars exist. So if you're getting pain from sitting down to write, you have to realize that there's going to be a reward after you actually start writing and the words start to flow, and you have to kind of mentally remember that, I think.
Right, that's good. That reminds me of another tool that I use. It's related to using the unconscious mind, and that is to visualize the book finished, published. Imagine yourself as you're writing a book, because as you know, writing a book is a big, I think writing a book is a little bit like having children. But if people actually realized how hard it was going to be, we would be extinct. It's just that people think, oh, what a great idea. And I have four children, and I adore them. But if you really knew before you started how hard it was going to be, I think really there would be a lot fewer people in the world.
I know. I've always said that the best part of writing a book is when it's over.
That's right. And it's the same thing. It's if people realized before they wrote a book, if they realized how difficult it was going to be, they might not do it. So,
exactly visualizing it is a very big deal. And I'm actually working on a book now, and I've written 12 books, and I have them sitting on my shelf. And even though it's like I'm not necessarily going to read my own books, I consciously put them on my shelf so that I would see the end result.
Right.
I have them sitting in front of me, so when I'm stuck or feeling grumpy about I don't feel like writing today, you know, I look up and go, you know, someday it really is going to be done, because I'm, you know, sort of trying to fight off those negative voices, like you're saying. It's like, I am going to finish this. I've done this before. I can do it again.
Right.
Obviously, that's easier on the second book, but
right, and you can take that a step farther and literally let the finished book call to you. Let the finished book, in other words, you can feel that finished book, feel it, visualize it as if you could hold it in your hand. Visualize it as if it were as real as the ones that are already on your shelf, and imagine, okay, a magnet is drawing me from where I am now to that finished book. What's between me and it? And let the power of the completed task pull you along toward its completion. it's a little woo-woo, but it actually works.
Well, I think, too, even if you don't actually sit down and do anything as specific as writing a letter, is if at the end of the day you just sit, and I do this all the time, I'll think about an article that I know I need, an article or a book chapter or a book section or whatever I have to write the next day, and I'll just think about it. And I'll say, you know, I here's 3 points I need to cover, and then I'll go, you know, make dinner, go to sleep, and whatever. And then the next morning, it's almost like you say, there's all this stuff happening overnight when you don't really realize it. You thought you were sleeping, but your mind was
right.
Still busy. And,
it's extremely powerful. It's
amazing.
Powerful. And if you try writing the note, it just focuses it that much more.
Mm-hmm.
It's really kind of amazing.
Yeah. I've been doing that a lot, actually, lately. That's a fairly recent discovery for me, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I mean,
really,
I sort of knew
really
about it, but I wasn't really...
your conscious mind.
Yeah, I wasn't being very organized about it in a way. I kind of, like, knew that worked, but I wasn't... I think it's partly because I've had to do a lot more writing lately, but now I'm actually really specifically... going ahead and going, okay, tomorrow I have to write about this, so this is, you know, and thinking, you know, if I actually don't know what I'm going to write, I'll think up the article, actually separating when I think up what I'm going to write about, like, say, a blog post or something, and I kind of don't know what it's going to be about because it's for my blog. I can make it about anything. But actually separating the idea generation time from the actual production time has worked out extremely well, because I'll do the idea generation time the night before, and sometimes I'll talk it over with my husband and blah, 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 and then my brain will set to work, and then the next morning I just sit down and write it. It's great.
Right. The power of sleeping on things is very great.
Mm-hmm.
Very great. So let's talk a little bit about some other tools that people can use to go through the process of getting started so they can really make their point. First of all, writing is actually a three-stage process. Someone once said, writing is simple. You just sit down and stare at a piece of paper until drops of blood start to form on your forehead. So that is one way to start writing. But in fact, writing takes place in three stages: the getting ready stage, the first draft stage, and the revision stage. And people, in my experience as a trainer and editor, people tend to vastly underestimate the importance of the first stage, the getting ready stage. In reality, getting ready should take 30 to 45% of your total project time. That's almost half of the time that it takes to do the entire project is spent on getting ready. And what happens when we get ready? First of all, during the getting ready phase, we commit ourselves to begin, and that's where going through, that's people lose vast amounts of time to procrastination and fear. That's where that time goes. So the first thing that we need to do is process ourselves, deal with ourselves however we need to, in order to commit to begin. Next, during the getting ready phase, is to clarify what I call the three P's, and I'll be talking about this in more detail. The three P's are purpose, person, and point. So those are important. During this phase, you also choose your method of organization. Are you going to do this chronologically or cause-effect, problem-solution, geographically, compare-contrast? How are you going to do it? And also during this phase, you should gather all your data so you don't end up halfway through a document realizing that you need a piece of data and then saying, oh, darn, I don't know, whatever, and thereby losing the flow of what you're trying to do. So all of that takes place in the first stage, the getting ready stage. The second stage of writing is writing your first draft, which should take 15 to 20% of your total project time. Writing the first draft, the only reason to write a first draft is so that you have something to revise. People sometimes think, oh, if I were a good enough writer, I'd be able to write my first draft, and that would be perfect. And those of you who are more experienced writers know that that's really kind of right up there with saying, oh, I'll be able to go to the ATM as often as I want and just keep taking out money without ever making a deposit. So what
That'd
we do
cool.
is, just write straight through your first draft without stopping to revise. And if you find a place where you're getting stuck, if you have something where your little voice is starting to chime in, if you have missing data, put it with brackets so that if you don't have the data, do not, I repeat, do not stop writing. Get up and go and look up the piece of missing data. That is a mistake with a capital M. Simply make a set of brackets and write date of service or latitude, longitude, or whatever it might be. Write in what it is that you're missing and keep going. It's really important. Do your three P's, do your planning, get your data together, and then sit down and just flow. And anything that you don't like, mark it with brackets and keep writing so that you get through a first draft and then you have something to revise. The third stage of writing is revision, which should take 30 to 40% of your total project time. And it's going to have to happen frequently. Writing, and we all know this proverb, writing is rewriting what has already been rewritten. So the first stage of revision is, ironically, to not revise. The first stage of revision is to put the document aside. I believe that it is nearly impossible to edit effectively immediately after you've finished writing. And that's because I think if we all jumped into a functional MRI machine, I think that we would find that different parts of our brain are lighting up during the writing phase and during the revising phase. It's like during the writing, the creative mind is going, we're running, we're flowing, we're saying, yeah, we're getting our document out there. Revision requires a totally different kind of attention, and it's nearly impossible to make the bridge between those two mental approaches to do it sort of on a team. So the first thing to do is to put it aside, and hopefully you will have allowed yourself enough time that you can put it aside overnight, so that your unconscious mind can do half the editing for you before you sit down to look at it and come back to it the next morning. I think we've all had the experience, the unfortunate experience, of writing something one day and saying to ourselves, wow, I am so smart. Wow, I did such a great job on this. This is great. And hopefully we don't send it out to anyone while we're still in the throes of that feeling. Then we come in the very next day, look at the thing that we thought we were so smart about the day before and think, oh my gosh, what did I do? And as I say, when I train business people, I implore them, if something is really important, don't nail it the same day you write it. If it's really important, let it sit overnight before you send it out. So the first stage of revision is to put it aside. Second revising tool is to read it aloud. Your ears will tell you the truth in the places where your eyes lied to you. So what we want to do is read it aloud. Your voice, where your voice stops and inflects downward, it will tell you where you should put a period in. Where your voice stops or pauses will tell you where you should put a comma in. Read it aloud. Sometimes it helps to have someone else read it and comment on it. And during that period, we also, before we send it out, we want to make sure there are no typos. Three phases of writing are getting ready, which is 30 to 40%. The math does add up here. Writing the first draft, 15 to 20%. And revision, which should take 30 to 40. If you add the ranges up, it all adds up. So let's go to the three P's, purpose, person, and point. These three elements are like the DNA of your document, that if you get these right, then it's just a question of extrapolation to your whole document, that the whole document will come out just, it's just like the moment of conception. There's a bit of chaos at the moment of conception, and then after that, everything is just extrapolated. And so depending on what happens at the moment of conception is what will determine whether we end up with something that has two arms, two legs, two eyes in the front of the head, two ears on the side of the head, something that will really function, or whether we end up with something that is with like three legs and an arm and the ears on the top of the head and eyes on the knees and whatever. So what you need to know is that if something is not conceived clearly at the point of purpose, person, and point, all the revision in the world is not going to save your document. It's just like if you have a creature that has three legs and one arm, and the arm is on the top of the head, and it's all just all kablooey. Yes, you can hire a brilliant orthopedic surgeon, and you can get everything put so that things are more or less put in their proper places, and it will stagger down the street, but it will never, ever be as good as something that was conceived properly in the first place. So more than anything else, the three P's is your crucial tool for getting started. If you're sitting down and you're thinking, oh, my gosh, how can I start? What am I going to do? This is what you can do. You can take a screen or a piece of paper and write P, P, P. Purpose, person, point. And now we're going to go through those one by one. The purpose is you ask yourself, what is my purpose in writing this? Why am I spending time on it? What results do I intend it to produce? And specifically, what do I want my reader to do after reading this? So the purpose drives everything. Purpose drives word choice. Purpose drives organization. Purpose drives everything. And it's a good lesson for any kind of important conversation before you go into an important conversation to ask yourself, what is my purpose? And certainly before you take your time to write any document, ask yourself the purpose of the document. So I'm going to read a brief document that someone turned into me as a writing sample once. And Susan, I want you to tell me what you think the purpose of the document was. Okay?
Okay.
So here we have it. Dear Sir, on November 9th, 2009, company shipped cargo from our manufacturing plant to Newark, New Jersey. When the cargo arrived, several boxes of product had been torn open. The merchandise in these boxes had been damaged so that it could not be sold. The value of the lost merchandise was $532.55. I look forward to hearing from you at your earliest convenience so that we may resolve this matter. Yours truly. What is the purpose of that document?
Are they trying to get money refunded from a shipping company?
Mm-hmm. Trying to get money. So if we look at the common purposes, the most common purposes are to inform, to request, and to persuade. So among those three, what would you say that falls in there? Inform, persuade, or request?
Request.
It's a request, but if we look at the document, if we remember the document, which it's, I know it might be a little difficult without a visual there, but what happened in the document is the person never actually asked for the money. She said the value of the lost
yeah, that's
merchandise.
True.
The value of the lost merchandise was so much, and then came, she jumped straight to, I look forward to hearing from you at your earliest convenience. So her overlying purpose, or underlying purpose, however you might say it, was to request the reimbursement, but she never actually asked for the money. And this is why it's so vital to know going in what your purpose was. The missing sentence in that document was, please reimburse us in this amount by November 30th, by whatever date it might be, because requests require deadlines. So her purpose was to request, but the actual request that she needed to make was actually missing from the document.
Mm-hmm.
And it made it less likely that she would actually get the money or get the money in any kind of a timely fashion. So the second of the three P's is the person. And when we think about the person to whom we're writing, and you may have done this in other seminars or webinars, but visualize one person that you're writing to, one sort of composite reader, even if you're writing to a lot of readers, visualize one person and imagine yourself just writing to that one person so that you're not thinking about writing to a million people, but imagine yourself writing to one person. And as you think about writing to your reader, it's essential to answer the questions that the reader is asking himself. And here are a few of the inner questions that people are often asking themselves while they're reading documents. What's in it for me? Everyone's favorite radio station, WIIFM. What's in it for me? So it's essential to demonstrate to people why it's important that they read what you've written. If they don't think that there's anything in it for them, they won't read it. So that's the first question. What's in it for me? Then people are asking themselves, and think about your own experience as a reader. How do you feel when you read things? If it's a letter or an email, people may be asking, why me? Why did I get this? So what? Who cares? And why should I trust you? If you're writing a piece of nonfiction, it's essential that people have a reason for believing you. You have to give yourself the credibility so that people will actually understand what you're saying. So purpose, then person. What's in it for me? The other thing in addressing the person to whom you're writing is to talk about their hot buttons. Hot buttons are emotional subjects which make people wake up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night or have heart palpitations during the day. Most hot buttons involve either avoiding pain or gaining pleasure, and these are just a few of them. Money, getting more or losing less. Status, their job, security, praise, criticism, recurring problems, safety, market share, reputation, cost, deficit, pressure, stress, reliability, productivity. All of these are in my book, Get to the Point. So if you want the whole list, you can get the book. But there are many, many different hot buttons, emotional subjects that people are motivated by when you allude to them. So if we go back to our shipping example, who do you think that letter was addressed to?
The person at the company
that the merchandise. Someone at the shipping company. So,
yeah.
You know, let's just say that it's the manager of the shipping company. You know, maybe it got taken in by the administrative assistant and then goes to the manager. So if you're the manager of the shipping company, what are your hot buttons?
Well, you're going to be worried that you're going to get canned because you broke this stuff and now you have an unhappy customer. So you have fear. You have definitely loss of status. Potential loss of money if you lose your job goes down a stress because you're going to get yelled at by your manager because you're a middle manager guy and that could happen. And
Loss of
reputation, yeah, definitely. Certainly no praise. Definitely some negative consequences could transpire.
But at the same time, he's probably not crazy about shelling out $500 to pay you back.
Exactly.
So if we think about it, let's just imagine that instead, in addition to writing what was written in that document, let's just imagine that the person had added something like this. We would like to continue our long-standing relationship with your company. Your firm has a reputation for excellent customer service, and we have come to expect prompt conflict resolution from you. In order to resolve this issue smoothly, please reimburse us in full for the damaged merchandise by November 30th. Now, just imagine which letter is going to get you that check in the mail. The original, which just went to, I look forward to hearing from you, or the one that took note of the purpose and the person that it was addressing. The document that takes active note of its purpose and its person is the document that's going to be more effective. So that is really crucial. The third of the three keys is the point. How many times have you gotten a document, an email, a letter, or something, and you said to yourself, what was the point? What was the point? Why did this person write? You know, you're asking yourself, why did I get it, and what's the point? sometimes when people don't take the time to identify for themselves their main point, what they do is throw a whole bunch of points on the paper and pray that the reader will figure out which one was the main one. And the thing is that the reader is not going to do the writer's job. The onus is on the writer to identify the main point clearly. And that, when I say the point, I mean the one point that you cannot do without. The one that if you cut to the chase and say, what am I really trying to say? If I had to boil it all down into one sentence, what would that one sentence be? If I only had 30 seconds to say this, what would I say? What is the bottom line? What is the point that you cannot do without? So you could have a 100-page long document, and even that 100 pages could be reduced to one or two sentences, which are the essential message that the writer is trying to convey. And that's when I say the point in purpose, person, and point, that's the point that you have to know before you start to write.
Yeah, actually, in a book, it's like the back cover copy where you have to, you know, if you want to visualize it, another big document is a book. And how do you write the headline for the back cover copy? What's that going to be?
So, that's a good way to think about it. If you were going to write the cover copy, if you were going to write the blurb for the book, what would it be?
What's the point?
What is the main point? Or if you imagine someone recommending the book to another person, they would say, hey, you really ought to read The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. It's about this amazing woman. She had a terrible life, and she figures out, and she's a math genius, and she overcomes tremendous obstacles and has this really bizarre relationship with a journalist. It's an amazing book. You know, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is how many hundred pages long?
Yeah.
It's an amazing, it's a long book. But you can still describe it in just a couple of sentences, and I don't know that I just did describe it as ideally as I could have, but you want to think about what one person would tell another person when they're recommending your book to another person, and have that point in mind before you write the book. Don't try to identify your main point as you're writing. Certainly, you're doing this as just as preliminary notes for a document. So the point that you need to get across in a shipping example is your company damaged $500 worth of merchandise. Please reimburse it. Now, having said that, I'll say that you will not necessarily always come right out and state your main point in so many words in your document. You may actually develop your main point through a variety of ancillary points so that the reader will come to comprehend your main point, but you won't necessarily say it in the most bald-faced manner. And I'm going to talk briefly about why or when you might do that. But the three P's, there is a checklist and get to the point, purpose, person, and point. If you ever don't know how to start and you don't know what to do, this is what you can do. Deal with your fear and procrastination, schedule time for yourself, and do your three P's, person, purpose, point. Purpose, person, point, in that order. And identify those three factors, and from there you will have a well-conceived document and you will be able to really, really get started. Okay, it's 5 minutes before the hour. Nobody has sent me any questions. Susan, do you want me to go on and present some more material, or do you want to stop for questions?
I don't have any more questions. If you have more that you have...
I always have more material.
Okay.
I know
you have other things you might need to do today, but if you want to continue for a couple more minutes, we can go to the top of the hour.
I'm actually going to go to some basic patterns of organization. First of all, writing and organizing are completely distinct processes. So never try to write and organize at the same time. Trying to do them both at the same time is like trying to build the house and decorate it at the same time. first get the house built. Make sure that all the windows are square. Make sure that the windows are where they belong, that the doors fit on the hinges. Make sure that all the walls are straight and not crooked and leaning. The structure has to be there before you worry about your verbiage. So often I see people agonizing. Should I put a comma here? Should I put a period there? Should I use this verb? Should I use that verb? And the problem is the whole document doesn't stand. The document must stand. It must have a strong structure. Once you have a structure, then you can start painting. Then you can put in drywall. Then you can fill it. Or once you have the skeleton, okay, fine. The skeleton works. Good job. Now we can add muscles and tendons and skin, and then we can add clothes when we're all done. But if the structure's not there, you're done for. So the structure has got to be there before you work on the verbiage. So first of all, do the structure and then fill it in. One of the other differences between writing and organizing problems is that writing problems are constant throughout a document, but organizing problems are exponential. If your spelling, grammar, and punctuation are not good, they're going to be just as bad on page 50 as they were on page 1. But if you have faulty logic, omissions, redundancies, then if you have that on a one-page document, a person can reorganize in his head a one-page poorly organized document. But if you're going to write a 40 or 50 or 100 or 200-page document that's not really well organized, by the time the person gets to page 20 or 30 or 40, he will be completely befuddled, because organization problems get worse as you go along, because the things are more and more and more illogical, and one piece of bad logic builds on another, and in the end, it just all gets worse as the document goes along. So it's essential to do these things as two distinct processes. Do your three P's, then create your structure. And as you do that, remember a few basic points of organization. As a general rule, put your main point first. If you don't put it first, put it last. If your reader is likely to oppose your conclusion, do not put your main point first. Why? Because if your person is going to be upset or oppose what you're saying, then you will not have that person's attention from the moment you make that point. The moment you make your point, the person's going to be pissed off, thinking about why you're wrong, blah, 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 and will not get the supporting points that you're trying to put forth. So if you think that your reader is likely to oppose what you're saying, then don't lead with your main point. First, build your case gradually and unveil your conclusion at the end. Third, if you want a person to do something as a result of reading your document, make sure that your request is perfectly clear and specify a date and even sometimes a time by which the request should be fulfilled, because clear requests produce action. And we all know that in general, you can start with a general statement and follow it up with supporting information. But that is generally a good way to work. But remember that every paragraph does not necessarily have to be like in your 5-paragraph essay with a topic sentence and following up specific information. If you're doing a 5-paragraph essay, then yes, I certainly encourage you to do that. But if you're writing a longer piece, like a book, the paragraphing is also meant to break up the page so that you don't have large blocks of text. So if you can find some place where it's reasonably logical to break your paragraph, you can still break your paragraph. I learned this from my editor at Celestial Arts. I had written a long paragraph, and he said, no, we're breaking this. And I said, no, it doesn't have a topic sentence. It's not. He said, I don't care. We're breaking it because it's too much on the page. And so I learned that. And if you're writing for something online, all the more so, break that up. Break it up, break it up, break it up into small chunks of information. Okay, I think that our time is up. If you can just remember how to overcome your fear and procrastination and how to do your three P's, it will solve the problem for you of how do you get started on any project, and how can you get to the point? And I do urge you, if you're interested in learning more, take a look at my book, Get to the Point, the second edition by Elizabeth Danziger. You can get to it. You can find it at gettothepoint.info, or just go straight to Amazon and pick it up. Also, I send out monthly writing tips called Write-A-Mins for free. If you want to sign up for Write-A-Mins, go to my website, www.worktalk.com, W-O-R-K-T-A-L-K, worktalk.com, and sign up for Write-A-Mins. They're fun, they're interesting, and they are very, very useful. And, Susan, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for being here. So, I love the name Write-A-Mins. That's awesome.
We're writing vitamins.
That's great. How often did you say they come out?
Every month.
Every month. Okay, that's great. Well, I'm going to go sign up, if for no other reason, because that's just a wonderful name. And as a writer, this has actually been really informative, and as someone who has gone through utterly painful writer's block situations, that, you know, I won't dwell there, but I think we've all been there, and it's also really encouraging, just in the long run, to know that you're not alone. Even John Steinbeck and Hemingway had problems, you know.
I know, it's really amazing, isn't it?
I know. So I think this has been extremely helpful, and, you know, even if you have been writing for a long time, to just sometimes when you're stuck, to just, you know, yes, maybe you've written 4 books or 10 books or 30 books, but we all still get stuck, and it's great to have that reminder that when you do get stuck, to just go back to the basics and the 3 P's and go, oh yeah, let's just think about who's reading it and what I'm trying to say.
Right, the basics are always relevant.
Yeah. So anyway, at this point we are out of time, and thank you again for being here. For anyone who is listening later, again, you can find Liz online at her website, which is worktalk.com. And thank you again all for being here. It's been a lot of fun.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Liz.
All right.
And I'll send